You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into this virtual edition of College Basketball Recruiting Weekly. I'm your host, 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting, Adam Finkelstein, and we just got off the road with the end of the July recruiting period, which wrapped up with the NCAA Academy in Memphis, Tennessee, which is why we are not in the studio this week. But instead, we are going to bring you content from different places, including Matt Norlander from CBSSports.com, who just had a major story break on CBS about the changing landscape of the NCAA calendar and how it could and very likely will impact the recruiting world next year. He and I are going to unpack that in detail, and then Eric Bossy will come on and join me, and we will break down what we saw at the NCAA Academy. All that and more coming up in the next 30 minutes. Make sure to stick with us, or if you'd rather listen, you can find us now in the Apple podcast section. Just search College Basketball Recruiting Weekly. We've got great stuff coming each and every week. All right, everybody, welcome back. CBS Sports lead college basketball reporter Matt Norlander joining us today. Matt just reported some potentially groundbreaking news for the college basketball calendar, which will, of course, impact the recruiting calendar. Matt, some big changes coming next year, according to your recent reports.
Yes, this is not yet official, but okay. I had a two-part story go up last week, and essentially, as you well know, Adam, because of the transfer portal and NIL, it has led to just a calendar crunch for coaches. And this isn't, you know, millionaire coaches complaining about not having free time. This is assistants at mid and low major levels who are making, you know, $30,000, $35,000 a year, just as much as it is the multimillion-dollar coaches. So, and this is the rare topic, Adam, that has, if not universal, near universal backing and support. And for the first time in a long time, the National Association of Basketball Coaches has been able to actually get their voice heard at the NCAA level to implement change in a way that would directly impact college basketball. Sometimes these things get changed, and what is good for lacrosse or hockey might not be good for basketball. I won't bore you with the details, but this is a major change. So, not yet official, but yes, here are the main takeaways. If this is passed in October by the Division I Council, the calendar for the, and this is for the off season, the regular season, this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about how the sport is built, your area of expertise. So the transfer portal, 60 to 30 day shrinkage. That is expected to be the case, not just in men's basketball, but across NCAA sports. A big reason why, NCAA data suggests the overwhelming amount, as in north of 90% of transfers happen in the first 30 days of a window. And then the final 2 days, you've got this huge spike, 11th hour. So it's expected that it will go from 60 to 30 days, and the portal will open at some point in March or April. When it actually opens is up for debate. I detail that in my story on CBSSports.com. But regardless, April, which has long been the month where live evaluations have taken place, major shoe companies have their spring circuits. They play, some of those games get played without coaches in attendance. Some get played with them. Now, that will get moved to May, and April will be dedicated to the transfer portal, hosting transfers for official visits, coaches flying out to do visits with these transfers wherever they may be based. So that is a major shift, and I actually couldn't get an answer to this from coaches. And I went back to coaches who have been around for 25 years. I tried to find out the last time that April did not have a live period, that coaches could not watch high school recruits.
I can remember it. It's happened before. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I can remember when April went dead. So it has happened before.
So it's been a long time, because I started at CBS in late 2010, and it's been there since I started. So yeah. So in the mid aughts, and then there would be a live period that would be brought to May, one weekend only. And before we get into the further months, I do want to actually cue you up, Adam, on this one thing, because what I learned in reporting the story, and I guess I had heard some of this in recent years, but I guess I had forgotten that I had heard it, was apparently a lot of grassroots coaches on these different circuits have been asking for this change for a long time, because in their opinion, at least with some of them, they believe that getting these players who are coming off of their high school seasons and then play with their travel teams, that they weren't yet gelled. They needed an extra 2 or 3 weeks, and they would always prefer them to be watched by coaching staffs in May when they had a couple of weeks underneath their legs. Have you heard the same? Would you agree with that sentiment?
I would agree with that sentiment. I do think that early on in April, when college coaches are allowed out, it's not as organized as it tends to be. The typical, let's take college coaches out of it. Typically, from a grassroots standpoint, once the high school season's over, kids go almost directly into the grassroots season. Depending on when their high school season ends, they may or may not have a little bit of a break as others finish up. But you go right into grassroots season. And then it's been that the, you know, last two weekends, unless you have the Final Four, or unless you have Easter, the holiday weekend, historically become those live weekends. And that, in my opinion, is not typically the best version of those teams and by extension, those kids. So I do think that is a fair sentiment. Now, here's my question, because what's fascinating about all this is that last week, the NCAA released next year's recruiting calendar. It came out last week, and it said, like, okay, business as usual, two weekends in April, two scholastic weekends in June. They're going to shrink July a little bit, meaning that this year, where we had 4 days in the first week and 2 weeks, 2 days in the second week, it's going to go down to 3 days in the first week and no second week, with then the NCAA Academy being the last option. So am I to understand you correctly that may be kind of pulled back now, that it might just be like a psych moment, like, no, we're not really going to do that next year?
You are to understand me correctly. Now, I want to at least put this
Genius.
Out there. I know. Trust me, because I've been reporting on this story and this calendar behind the scenes for 6-7 weeks at this point.
Right.
And so, yes. So I saw this is now, when people are listening, this has been more than a week since this calendar was sent out. It wasn't this big public announcement. It went to every coach. And
right.
I'm saying, here's the calendar for next year. And so then I get hit up on Friday and Saturday being like, I guess this is it. And then I had to double back and be like, hold on a second. Like, is this it? And no. So while there is a slight possibility that what I have reported and the proposed calendar, which has not been approved yet, could theoretically get shot down or pushed back a year, every indication I've gotten, not just from coaches, but people with the NABC, talking to Craig Robinson, who heads up the NABC, talking to people on the Men's Basketball Oversight Committee, the belief is what I reported late last week is going to either identically or closely resemble what ultimately gets passed, provided that people that are outside the world of college basketball, not dealing with it on a day-by-day and week-by-week basis, don't look at this and mess it up. Because what is happening here is what the coaches are asking for. They are asking for April to be, not every single coach, but the majority, they want April to be dedicated to the portal. They want one live weekend in May. They don't want to have on the weekends that have major holidays, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter when it's not during the season, Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Juneteenth, dark days. You cannot go see a recruit cannot see you. That is going to happen.
It'd be great to see our kids on Father's Day. That would be nice.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? This is such a wide ranging story, Adam, that it was long. It was two pieces. It was long as this. I couldn't get really into the weeds, but I must have had a dozen coaches talk to me about how absurd it is this year and years past that they are freaking on the road recruiting on Father's Day.
Yeah. Well, it's because they're trying to avoid the first two weekends of June, because a lot of people are still in school, and that I get. I mean, but yeah, it's that sucks, you know, being on the road and on Father's Day. And truthfully, I come off like I'm just saying, hey, I watch enough, you know, because I'm not.
Yes.
We're out regardless of the recruiting calendar. So, mm-hmm. All right, here's my quick questions.
Okay.
You said the date that the transfer portal will open is still a little up in the air. It seems to me that there's you're almost like penalized for being good right now. I mean, I would think they have to start this after the Final Four. Otherwise, the teams that are in the Final Four are almost penalized. However, the thing that pops in my head is like NBA free agency, where mm-hmm. start date is not really the start date. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. So it would seem like those are two variables they have to try and negotiate a little bit.
Yes, because when a player has made up his mind, a player has made up his mind, and you and I both know that in some cases, players make up their mind by Christmas. So yeah, whenever it opens, it's official and it's in. But nevertheless, when there's nothing stopping a player from tweeting on February 17th, theoretically, like, I plan to enter the transfer portal at the end of the season, but I'm here to support my team. Like, there's nothing stopping that from happening, but the news cycle and the attention in earnest will begin once the portal officially opens and you see names in an official capacity actually enter that thing. And it's guaranteed to tick off coaches because there is no universal answer for this. There are coaches that believe my season ends March 18th. Why do I need to wait until April 5th when that can actually poison my locker room? I think that the portal should be a team by team thing. A lot of mid-major coaches believe that, but others think, no, we should be going and opening this thing after the Final Four. I had one coach that made the second week of the tournament last season. He texted me, we did 6 Zooms, meaning Zooms with transfers when we were on site in the NCAA tournament last season. Like, this is, you know, if you got to get business done, you got to get it done, whatever. We're not breaking out the violins for these guys, but ideally, you don't want to have to be doing that when you're trying to make a deep push into the NCAA tournament. So the portal start date will probably be either Monday after the first weekend. This past year, it was after Selection Sunday. That's going away. That no one wants that. It's bad for the sport. You can't have the bracket revealed. And then the next day, you've got 500 names in the portal, Adam. Okay. So it'd either be the Monday after the first weekend, the Monday after the Elite Eight, which is the favorite right now.
Yep.
After the tournament ends, so that would either be the Tuesday or Wednesday or team by team. We will wait and see on that. I know we're trying to do a quick hit here, so I'm going to try and cram in a ton of info.
Another question. You
okay, go ahead. Lay it on me.
What about grad transfers? Is it still open season? No rules for grad transfers?
That's another element that I debated putting in the story, but it would have added another like 300 words, and I didn't want to.
Part three coming soon. Yeah,
exactly. So. Because trust me, I talked to a number of coaches, particularly John Shire. Like, I interviewed him on site at Peach Jam. And when I thought, you know, we had talked what we needed to talk about on the record, he's like, I got one more thing I got to say. And he went on this thing about grad transfers because he's got Ryan Young. He's like, I hate the fact that Ryan Young could technically come to me on like August 8th and be like, Coach, sorry, I'm out of here. I don't know if or when that particular issue is going to get changed. I'll be a bit more clear here for people that aren't clear. If you are a grad transfer, you are not in summer courses. There is nothing holding you back from staying with the team you are on until a couple of weeks before the fall
semester. You can go on a foreign tour, not be happy with your playing time, and say, hey, I'm out on August 20th and go play somewhere else on September 1st. That's not an exaggeration, correct?
It is not an exaggeration. And while it would be fair for someone to say, hold on, like, how often is this going to happen? That's fair. But also, the reason why it's particularly fraught right now is there are more power conferences than not teams that don't have all of their scholarships filled. So it's not like, would they even have room? Yeah, they would. There's a lot of, there are 13 scholarships that are allotted. Okay.
Matt, I will say this. I'm in prep school country in New England, and I have never seen more college coaches trying to scoop incoming post grads right now to fill out their rosters. There are more spots available than ever. All right. Second question question I'm on. As it relates to the recruiting calendar, the current proposal, please correct me if I'm wrong. One non-scholastic weekend in May, one scholastic weekend in June.
Yes, it is. It is going from 2 down to 1, and it's really an elongated weekend. It is a 5-day period. This is your absolute wheelhouse here. so that, and I used a specific example in the story, so that if Michigan and Ohio want to do their high school-based Scholastic teams, they don't want them competing to get coaches. So Michigan said, you know what? We'll do our two-day thing on a Thursday, Friday. Saturday can be the day where coaches take off or travel. And then Sunday, Monday, Ohio gets it. Or if you're a coach recruiting and you have two big targets and one of them is in North Carolina and one of them is in Connecticut or Massachusetts, New England, whatever, hopefully it lands so that you can go to one region for 2 days and then to another region for two more days. So yes, only one live weekend in June. There's a lot of other stuff, reasons why they want to do that. Yeah. But yes.
And that's naive because everybody's going to go all 5 days. That's just
okay. Fair enough. But I'm just telling you.
Like, no, I know. I'm not shooting the messenger.
Yeah, I got you.
And then July is how many days?
July will be 8 days total. So July is going to be as
without the minus the NCAA Academy. So how many days for non?
Well, that's the other big factor with this. And we are really in the weeds, but your audience appreciates this stuff. So July, yeah. You are either on campus with your team or you are at an event recruiting. You cannot have recruits come see you. You cannot see recruits. It is either a dead period or an evaluation period. And at these evaluation periods, coaches are not by rule allowed to actually directly talk to recruits face to face. So if this goes through next year, it would be July 11 to 14. That is all of your Peach Jam, your Under Armour, your 3SSB, which I would think they're going to stay in that same area, Georgia, South Carolina. I actually think it makes a ton of sense. I think that should become the hub. Now, to your point with the Academy, your question on that, the second weekend is the weekend after, 4 days. And the NCAA Academy, I know you were down there. I polled 11 coaches who went. I asked them to rate it 1 to 10 decimal points allowed. The average rating from those 11 coaches, and they were high majors and mid majors, was 7.1, which is pretty solid. No one went lower than a 5. I had one coach go as high as 8.75. I heard it was better for mid majors and lows than highs. Really good for 16s, apparently. Point is this. Yes. It's not cheap to do that. No. They don't. A lot of coaches don't like when it is on the calendar, and I think the NCAA is aware of that. So the question becomes, can you move it on the calendar? Where do you move it? They don't want to add more evaluation days on this calendar. Do you do something like, as I put in my story, I don't know if they'd be willing to do this, but a lot of coaches are craving the Vegas setup, probably because it's Vegas, but also because, as you well know, for so many years, that was where you had an Adidas team play a Nike team in a showcase. And
that
you
happened
have,
again this year. Adidas and Under Armour. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's not quite what it was prior pre-FBI thing. Right. So I just wonder if the NCAA Academy does continue to exist, and there's no guarantee that it will, but I think it's got more momentum now than people thought it might've had a month ago, but we'll see. Would the NCAA willing to say, okay, we're only gonna have two live weekends in July. And if we've got to have the Academy after the Peach Jam and all the Under Armour and Adidas, all that stuff ends in the first weekend, why don't we just go put it in Vegas so that if coaches and particularly if it's good mid-major,
they don't have the courts.
Vegas is huge though, Adam. They literally
They want it all under one roof. They want it all under one roof. So I
couldn't
think
use that, the old Adidas facility there.
I think there's only what I heard, and okay. This is unofficial, but what I heard this weekend were the only options for this. It might be possible in Indianapolis, where the NCAA is based, and Orlando, where you have kind of old AAU nationals. All right. I know we're taking up more time. So let me just confirm, 4 days in July and the second weekend would be the NCAA Academy.
No, that is not clear whatsoever yet because I'll be quick on this one. The NCAA Academy needs to get voted through for approval on a budget level at the NCAA to even happen in 2024. And I was told through two sources that it costs north of $8 million per year
for the boys and girls. I heard the same. Yes.
That's expensive. And so the second weekend can still be, the stuff that happened in Vegas or wherever else, but
they make $1 billion a year off the NCAA tournament. Just saying.
Yeah. I hear you, but people that look at the balance sheets have to actually approve this. If it happened, I still think it would be the second weekend of July, but that is no guarantee. And it still even has to get passed, Adam.
Matt, thank you so much. Potential major changes coming. Let me end with this. I feel like the pendulum is swinging a little bit. And initially it was all about, rightfully so, player rights. They ought to be compensated. But we totally took coaches' rights out of consideration. And all due respect to the Power Five head coaches, nobody's feeling bad for the guys making, millions of dollars a year flying to their places on the chartered flights. It is, to your previous point, the low major assistant who has to figure out how to get from place A to place B and still do their job and stay competitive. Those are the people that I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the underlining premises of your story is that morale, shall we say, or, you know, just, I think certainly there's a mental health component to this in terms of the toll that the current landscape is taking on the college coaches community. And so when I say the pendulum is swinging, I think we're finally starting to see some acknowledgement of what the current schedule is doing to the coaches. And again, I'm not talking about the Power Five head coaches or even the Power Five assistant coaches. I'm talking about the 80% of the rest that nobody's really thinking about. So
without a doubt, that's a major component and why I wrote it. And although those lesser known coaches aren't as quoted as heavily in my stories, it is a major factor. And I'll end on this. There is consideration for the players here too, in this regard, because the transfers are looking for places to land. They didn't want to give them short shrift in April. And so because high school players might be getting short shrift with coaches not going out, they say, okay, put that in May. When we can deal with the portal. So they are actually trying to give as much attention as possible to every single aspect of this while understanding there is no perfect answer. There's no perfect solution, but at least we can get a little more balance, because it doesn't matter if you make $30,000 as a third assistant, a low major, Adam, or if you are making millions and millions of dollars. Stress and mental health, it's a major thing. And just
no, because it's real.
It doesn't mean we can't try to make it better. So they are trying to make it better. And this, for us, this could mark literally the biggest off-season overhaul to the calendar that we have seen in a generation.
Matt, thank you so much. Everybody should go read this work to get much more in the weeds with some of the details. CBSSports.com. You can follow Matt on Twitter, Matt Norlander, NORLANDER, Matt Norlander on Twitter. Matt, as always, thank you very much.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, Ebos, you and I were in Memphis, Tennessee last week for the final week of the NCAA recruiting period at the NCAA Academy. And this was 4 days, although you were there. Jeez, you were there. You were in Tennessee for the better part of a week. But it was better part of 4 days. It was basically divided into three segments. You have what they call the individual pathway, which is basically a camp for 400 players around the country. Then you have what they call the team pathway, which is basically a team tournament only for 15 and under and 16 and under teams, 24 teams in each of those two divisions, 48 teams total, but basically no rising seniors in the team tournament. And then finally, you had the Canadian basketball group who did some workouts and things as part of it. So you basically had those three or four components all rolled into one. The event was totally free of cost, if I'm not mistaken, for not only the participants, but also for the NCAA coaches. And this was quite a big expenditure for the NCAA. I'm going to say this. I was pleasantly surprised by what I saw in Memphis. I thought it was a worthwhile few days from an evaluation standpoint. But what was your overall take on the week?
Yeah, there's a lot of money spent into it, but it seems to have been money well spent on it. You know, not only did the players and the teams all get in for free, but they each got to have a guardian come along that the NCAA paid for the expense. So there's some tweaks. You know, ideally you'd like to see a few more better players doing the individual route, but all in all, I think it was a pretty big success. And the addition of the US Open, the 15U and the 16U to the event really added a lot of coaches. And it was a deal where, you know, Monday was pretty lightly attended, but by Tuesday and Wednesday, I think several staffs, I know because I spoke to them, who had not planned on devoting any time to the NCAA Academy realized, hey, we need to come here because it's an actual chance to watch young kids that they don't usually get.
That's what I really liked about it. From an evaluator's perspective, I thought this was a great week because the 17 and under teams that we see in 3SSB and UAA and Peach Jam, like, they're spent right now. We don't need to watch them anymore. It's not good. It's not good basketball. You know, it's not a great evaluation setting at this point in the month. So I thought not including them really allowed college coaches, evaluators like ourselves, to focus on the young kids. And for college coaches, they don't have to babysit any of those older kids anymore. So I really like that part of it. The other thing it does is it basically releases college coaches who don't want to be there. Like, hey, you don't want to invest time releasing, evaluating the younger kids. You don't have to come. But if you do, if you value that, if you value getting eyes on them, if you value being able to track their progress over the years, now you've got days where you can devote entirely to the youngsters, the underclassmen that didn't previously exist. So what did you think about leaving out the 17 and under teams? Because I obviously ended up liking that part of it.
Yeah, I wasn't mad at it. Now, I would suspect that as this event evolves over time, that we'll see the inclusion of 17 and under teams, mm-hmm. but that may be a year or two down the road. But I think we'll see some things to do with perhaps some date changes to be a little bit earlier in the summer and mm-hmm. then including 17U teams. But it's definitely going to evolve. And for as much as people like to take shots at the NCAA, and certainly we've done plenty of that here, I do think they deserve some credit here. They've been taking feedback. They've been really adjusting things. They've been trying to adjust the recruiting calendar. They've, you know, people slammed this NCAA Basketball Academy the first time they did it back in 2019. And right. after a couple of years off for the pandemic and restructuring it, they brought back a completely revamped thing. And I think they're still going to take more steps to keep revamping it. But all in all, you know, really good experience.
Now, the camp portion, you could have rising seniors at. I know you spent a lot of time watching that individual pathway, as it's called. Who did you think was the best player in the camp?
For the best player in the camp, at least while I was watching, it was T. Bartlett, a guy that we have in our top 70 in the class of 2025. He's a big man out of Las Vegas. He's 6'10", nearly 275 pounds. I think you got to see him some too at Peach Jam, Adam. He's a guy that when he makes up his mind to dominate and be tough around the rim, he's a load, but he's in this camp, he was really able to showcase a lot of the other stuff that he does. He's got great hands, great feet, and he's a spectacular passer for a big guy. And he's the guy that looks like, you know, if he continues to get himself in better shape and shows off all these other things, you know, he's a guy who has a significant ceiling to move up in the rankings and impact college basketball, potentially the highest level. So it was a really good chance to see him in a setting where he could really individually shine.
You know, the guy who I finally got to lay eyes on was Alec Blair from California. And as we know, he is a two sports star who doubles not only on the hardwood, but also on the baseball diamond. And so that means he hasn't been as easy to evaluate this spring as some of the other players who are, you know, playing with grassroots teams consistently. But this was, you know, the first time that I'd been able to lay eyes on him this spring, the big lefty wing with some big guard type attributes. I don't know that I saw the big point guard advertised, but could certainly play make, saw the passing, really saw the overall feel for the game. I thought he had a really good mid-range game. He was able to elevate and score over top of people. Three-point shot was capable, certainly an area that needs to keep improving. He had a stretch, I think it was the morning of Tuesday, where he scored six straight points to really deliver his team the win, and then came up with the game-winning block. Another nationally ranked prospect who played in this event, just a rising junior, but someone who I was really appreciative to have the opportunity to see in this different kind of environment. Another guy who might have had the biggest or certainly one of the bigger followings all week long was the big fella from Houston, Trent. And you followed him. You watched him closely. What were your thoughts on what you saw this week? Did you see anything different in this setting that you didn't see during the EYBL?
Yeah, this was a real eye-opener when it comes to Trent Burns. We're talking about a kid who looks to be every bit of the 7'3" that he's listed at. And it's a guy that, while playing in the EYBL with the Houston Hoops, has primarily just kind of hung around the three-point line and hoisted jumpers. Well, I watched him play multiple games in this setting where he did not take a single three-pointer. Now, there was still some jumpers taken, some back foot jumpers, the dirt jumper, things like that. But what I got to see is a guy who has an incredibly high level skill around the basket. Uses either hand. He has jump hooks, the jumpers. He can pass. You know, he doesn't seem like he's moving particularly fast sometimes, but you got to remember he's 7'3". He's a massive human being. So sometimes he's moving much quicker than you realize, but he's starting to fill out. He's going to be able to carry a lot more weight on that frame. And, you know, he's been to Purdue. He's been to Rice. I think he's just getting off a visit to Tulsa. He's got a lot more coming in. And he's a guy that, to me, is a guy we don't have ranked right now, but I think we need to think about not only ranking, but being fairly aggressive with it and seeing, you know, where might this guy be in 4 or 5 years down the road? Because he's got a lot of the classic indicators of a late bloomer. And one of those guys that maybe a few years down the road, people are like, how the heck was he not ranked higher than this? And, you know, with what he's able to do with that size, with what he's able to do at that size, it's something to really take a close look at, I think.
Yeah, and I know Juwan Howard, Fran McCaffrey, two of the head coaches that were very prominently courtside to see him play, along with several others. Now, in the team portion, I focused primarily on the 16 and unders, the 10th graders, rising 11th. You watched some of the 15 unders. We're going to get to them, but I want to start with the 16 and unders where JL3 out of Texas won the championship. But whether it was on that team or any others, any big takeaways for you, whether it was standout players or anything else about this group?
It was just a really well-played event. You know, the JL3 team, I really love. They've got their big trio with Shelton Henderson and Patton Pinkins and the big guy Nigel Walls and Sebastian William Adams. I guess that's four guys, not a trio. Yep. All of them high major guys, all of them guys that, you know, are ranked nationally. And really backed it up. You know, they looked like possibly the best team headed in, and they certainly played at that. But in the 16U division, my big takeaway was with a guy who led his team to the finals, a class of 2026 kid, Brandon McCoy, who just blew me away with what he did for the Arizona Unity. Pushing 6'4", 15-year-old, he's long, he's quick, he has outstanding instincts. You know, obviously with a kid that young, there's going to be a little bit of a up and down, but you know, watching him play, my mind kind of went back to seeing guys like De'Aaron Fox at a young age, guys who can score and play make. And I think he set himself up as, you know, arguably the best point guard prospect in that class of 2026 and likely the best player I saw, regardless of pathway, regardless of division.
Yeah, he was, you know, I watched him the first night there. He was skilled, too. I mean, he's got that high release. He can make pull-ups. He can make threes. I was really impressed by that. In terms of JL3, you've got a feature right now on 247sports.com about Shelton Henderson. I had written about Sebastian Williams Adams. You know, for me, one of the reasons why, you know, I struggle some to watch the underclassmen is because there can be a disconnect between the best player and the best prospect. And I think sometimes with that JL3 team, like I was watching and I thought, you know, Shelton Henderson dominated a lot of the games I watched. He's just so strong, so assertive. But Williams Adams, I thought his upside was really glaring, at least the games I watched. I thought he really made some nice strides laterally, showed some signs of defensive versatility. He's super long. Thought he showed progression of his jumper, made a couple threes, but at the same time did it in a way that didn't sacrifice his efficiency. You know, he was on the glass. He was trying to get to the rim, trying to get downhill. So I was really excited about what I saw from him. Anybody else in the, whether it's in that 10th grade division or the 9th grade division that really stood out for you? Because I know you do value seeing these kids early and kind of starting the book on them at those underclassmen stages.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty wild because I could sit here and go over specific players all day long, right, from the 15U because I spent a lot of time with them too. But yeah. I think the general takeaway here is just how strong the class of 2026 looks in general. It feels like almost every time I saw a guy catching my eye on something like, oh, wow, he's another 2026 guy. You know, right. I was pretty surprised by the overall level of talent on the 15U teams. You know, the 15U event was won by Pro Skills out of the Dallas area.
Good week for Texas.
Yes. Very good week for Texas. And, you know, I guess good week for the EYBL too, for scoring there, since they won both of the events. But, you know, just in general, the class of 2026 is strong, and you can see we've had a ton of coverage on it up on 24/7 Sports. But, you know, I guess we gotta mention the guys from that winning team. They had a trio that I really like, and Marticio Hayes, Cameron Lomax, and Seven Spurlock. Hayes is a hard driving 6'3", 6'4" shooting guard who couldn't be kept from the rim. Cam Lomax was a really crafty athletic point guard who got into things. And then Seven Spurlock is just a big, strong utility wing. And that trio, again, you know, you bring up a thing of not always the best talent wins at that age group. It's the best teams. They were definitely the best team, but they were also pretty dang talented too. So these are guys that we're going to hear a lot more of in the future and project as high major guys.
All right, two more names I will mention in the 16 and under division. Davion Hanna from Mac Irvin Fire. He was dynamic, especially on Wednesday, that last full day. He had a buzzer beater in an overtime. It was a consolation game, but it was, I haven't seen the clip of it. I was assuming that it would pop up somewhere on social media, but he broke a tie to beat the buzzer with one of the most dynamic slashes I've seen in a long time. And that was kind of what he was doing all week, just unstoppable when he decided he wanted to get to the rim and not settle for jumpers. He was impressive. I also thought Malachi Moreno, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Indiana Elite. I mean, he's right around 7 feet. Good hands, good touch, presence in the post. And that was another really good team, that Indiana Elite 16 and under team. Got a lot more on this, 247sports.com. Again, this is kind of a on the road edition of College Basketball Recruiting Weekly as we are wrapping up the live period, but we will be back next week in the studio. We look forward to seeing you then, and be sure to keep it locked on 247sports.com and the 247 Sports channel for a variety of upcoming college commitments and announcements.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.